So we're reading from the Gathas of Hazaradanaya Khan. And this is on breath and magnetism. The mechanism of the human body shows the nervous system as its principal battery, in which magnetism is prepared by the action of breath. That was a pretty meaty sentence. Would anyone like it read again? Yes. The mechanism of the body shows the nervous system. So how we are in the world is a reflection of our nervous system. You understand that, right? I mean, we feel that from people. You know, some, we even use that in our vernacular. Oh, they're really wound tight, or they're like a cat on a hot tin roof, or, you know, they're so expansive, and, you know, I mean, we know that. The nervous system is reflected in the body. The mechanism of the human body shows the nervous system as its principal battery. The mechanism of the human body shows the nervous system as its principal battery, in which magnetism is prepared by the action of breath. Another example might be someone, we've all been in environments where we've really been captivated by someone's speaking manner or their singing. There's a magnetism, you know, when people are drawn to them. And that, again, is because of the control and the ability of mastery over the breath. We see that especially in the amazing opera singers, for example. But also we may experience it with certain creatures or actors when they talk. You know, we're drawn to that. We connect to that. It's a magnetism. So back to the reading. It is when the nervous system cannot function that this battery gets out of order and does not work properly. Many, in order to make this battery of the nervous system work properly, take drugs and other medicines, which stimulate the nervous system. Now, keeping in mind these teachings were being given in the 1920s, and still may be true today ever more so. Yeah? Many, in order to make this battery of the nervous system work properly, take drugs and other medicines which stimulate the nervous system. But instead of giving power to it, they take away power from it. And in the end, the nervous system becomes accustomed to all such medicines one takes. The nourishment of the nervous system is what breath attracts from space. The nourishment of the nervous system is what breath attracts from the space. As far as science goes, it says one gets into one's system oxygen. The mystic goes further in saying not only oxygen, but also the life and intelligence, that power and radiance which makes the nervous system in perfect order. Do any of these words sound familiar or connected to a practice? Okay. The mystic goes further in saying not only oxygen, but also that life and intelligence, that power and radiance which makes the nervous system in perfect order. The result of which is not only good health, but ever-increasing magnetism, which comes forth from the person in his thought, speech, movement, and action, charging his atmosphere with magnetism, which surrounds him, which surrounds her, as a fortification and protection against all influences. Physical and mental, thus making man live a fuller life. Again, the result of which, I read the whole paragraph, I think it's worth it. The nourishment of the nervous system is what breath attracts from space. As far as science goes, it says one gets into one's system oxygen. The mystic goes further in saying not only oxygen, but also that life and intelligence, that power and radiance, which makes the nervous system in perfect order, the result of which is not only good health, but ever-increasing magnetism, which comes forth from the person in his thought, speech, movement, and action, charging his atmosphere with magnetism, which surrounds him as a fortification and protection against all influences, physical and mental, which makes man's, thus making man live a fuller life. In mind what was said here, that science tells us that what we're taking in is oxygen, but the mystic, or one might say a sensitive soul, a one with an open view, one doesn't have to use the word mystic, goes further in saying not only oxygen, but life and intelligence and power and radiance. So I'd like to share this practice that some of us do. A Sufi initiate would certainly take up this practice, although they may not have had this practice transmitted to them exactly in this way. But these are the words of Hazrat Inayat Khan, and so I think quite trustworthy. These are from instruction papers from June 25th, 1926. And I think I will say a few words here that he said. These were, if you can imagine, this was a year and a half before his passing. And he was talking to people that would be left to offer these teachings again and again, like we're doing here. It's amazing to me that they've traveled around the world, and here we are sitting reading these papers. But he said to those who he was leaving entrusted with the transmission of these teachings, which are universal. We can't say it's just about Hazrat Inayat Khan. We're not here to worship him. He's not a prophet. He was a human being like us, which could perhaps inspire us to do our practice and be our best. So he said to those with him, "Today I will speak about the reading of the instruction papers. While reading the instruction papers for those who are sent to you, explain everything to the person's satisfaction. But two considerations must be made. One thing is that you explain to his satisfaction. The other, that you do not explain to a sleeping person so much that he may wake up. Because if he wakes up too soon, he will be difficult. Because if he wakes up too soon, he will be difficult. Better that he sleeps till the time for waking. The practices are given to him to prepare him for the waking. And if you read him the instruction anxiously to satisfy his curiosity and to convince him, perhaps your explanation will finish him. You've heard the expression, let sleeping dogs lie. And for those that are online or should be hearing this later online, the heavy breathing and the snoring is our sleeping dog here. I don't think anyone else has dozed off and started snoring yet. So again, the practices are given to him to prepare him for the waking. And if you read him the instruction anxiously to satisfy his curiosity and to convince him, perhaps your explanation will finish him. He thinks he no more requires the practice. The explanations are quite sufficient, and he will never come again. These are two opposite considerations. And we know this. We have people that are becoming experts in all kinds of things after a weekend workshop. And then they want to start charging others for their expertise. This is what he's speaking of. You see? And people are sometimes so curious, I'll just go see what it's like. If I like it, I'll take away something and then it'll be mine and I'll give it to others and I will become the expert. My goodness, we know this, right? You all laugh because you know it's true. So hopefully we know that's true because there's perhaps even that tendency in all of us to do that if we have to. This is part of those practices that help develop self-control and willpower. So that if we see that emerging in our being, because we all want to be seen, we all want to be loved, we all want to be acknowledged, we all want everyone to say we're doing a good job. It's true. You know, that's why we give all those children gold little stars on their charts. You know, we start promoting that, at least in this culture, at a very early age. You know, you almost get a gold star for going poopy. It's a very natural thing. But you see, we do this. And then we create this tendency in someone that always has to have that. So this was said to the people before him, before he gave these practices that are called the 20 purification breaths. And these breaths relate directly back to this paper. I can just put my hand on it. It's my hand. It's in my hand. The mystic goes further in saying not only oxygen, but also that life and intelligence, that power and radiance, which makes the nervous system in perfect order. Life and intelligence, power and radiance. And so here he gives the instructions, and we'll go through the practice, but I'd like to read this first. In explaining the 20 breaths of purification, observe the following points. Breath must be rhythmic. And I'll elaborate. In other words, the breath flows in and out freely in a rhythmic fashion. The rhythm of the breath must not differ too much from the natural rhythm. a little slower. The thought must be repeated with each inhalation and exhalation. It is, I inhale divine light and life, and with exhalation I radiate divine life and light. So it takes a bit of concentration, because the first phrase, and I'll repeat it through the practice, but we're drawing in the subtle quality of life into our battery, our nervous system, and we're charging it with life. And then, like a light tower, a lighthouse, we radiate life and light back out. So it starts, it reverses the quote, reverses the saying, reverses, and we go from the breathing in from the subtle to the less subtle, and out from the less subtle to the more subtle. So it's a kind of circle. So anyway, he says again here, the thought must be repeated with each inhalation. It is, I inhale divine light, L-I-G-H-T, and life, L-I-F-E, and with exhalation, I radiate divine life, L-I-F-E, and light, L-I-G-H-T. And then his last point is this. Tell the person that from the air, and again that relates back to this paper here, that from the air, tell the person that from the air he draws the essence of light and life and love. And that he radiates it. Tell the person that from the air he draws the essence of light and life and love, and that he radiates it. These are 20 breaths that are done in a sequence. The intention is to move the breath in different directions. And if you'll allow me, this relates back to the teaching from even last month, where it is said, the flow of the breath is like the flowing of a stream. Inhalation and exhalation show ebb and flow. The parts of the earth which water does not touch remain barren. So the centers in the body, with all their intuitive, innate capacities, remain unproductive if the breath does not reach them. So here the breath moves in different directions. So as to work the channels of the breath throughout the body in different directions, it's like an internal yoga, an internal exercise, and we're moving the breath in different directions, not only in and out, but up and down and sideways. So again, sit in a comfortable manner, yet alert and awake. Find the rhythm of your own breath. And keep in mind, that it is to be on the rhythm of your breath, but he does say a bit slower and a bit fuller. So there is a kind of deliberateness to this breath. And we will begin the first series of 20, the first five breaths, breathing in the nose and out the nose. We breathe in and internally repeat. I inhale divine light and life. And when we breathe out, we say, I radiate divine life and light. In the nose and out the nose, I inhale divine light and life. And we breathe out. I radiate divine life and light. Continue on your own. May say that as you breathe in, you feel every cell of your being like a little collector, a collector that's absorbing, like a solar collector, absorbing light in all of its dimensions. And when we radiate it out, we allow it to touch everything, expanding into the whole universe. Beyond this universe, there are these beautiful mystic poems of beings dancing with the stars. This is what we're doing in this breath. We're connecting with the whole universe. And the universe is breathing through us and with us. And when we breathe out, we expand into the universe. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. Breath is in the nose and out the mouth. In the nose and out the mouth. And as we breathe in the nose, we absorb. I inhale divine light and life, and we think also love. And then when we breathe out through the mouth, I radiate divine life. This natural, according to your rhythm, yet a bit fuller and perhaps just a tad slower. Very conscious breathing. Breathing in the nose and out the mouth. And now we breathe in the mouth and out the nose. In the mouth and out the nose. And we breathe in. I inhale divine light and life. And we should also set to consider love. Feeling of love. He says, doesn't say to use the word love, but the presence, the feeling, the atmosphere. And as we breathe out the nose, I radiate divine life and light. In the mouth and out the nose at your own rhythm. Beautiful practice we're doing. It also is reinforcing this practice of Jamal and Jalal. In the inhalation, we're receptive, reflective, absorbing everything. And on the exhalation, we're Jamal, active, radiant. You see? It's all there. In the mouth and out the nose. And the last breath is in the mouth, out the mouth. Breathing in the mouth and breathing out the mouth. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine light and life. Life and light. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. Concentration go and just go back to breathing in the nose and out the nose. I've asked Karim and Gita if she would lead us in the practice called Zikr. Zikr means remembrance. And this is the Zikr of Hazrat Anai Khan, which is different, perhaps, than the Zikr that some of us also may have participated in, which is a more physically active Zikr. There are different Zikrs from different Sufi orders that are transmitted. This Zikr is intended to be done. It's a Z-I-K-A-R is the spelling. However you see it from different Sufi orders spelled in different ways. This spelling is from it's from a Persian derivative, as is the pronunciation of the Zikr. And I think Karima Gita will speak to that. The word Zikr means remembrance. It's to constantly call to mind. It's not easy to say in a few words, but that unit of aspect that keeps everything moving and tied together, tethered together. As some people want to say literally, that the words mean there is nothing but God. But a Buddhist wouldn't say that. A Buddhist might say, it is what it is. Or, everything's interconnected and interdependent. I heard an astrophysicist once say that we are connected to the Earth chemically, and we are connected to each other biologically, and we are connected to the universe atomically. It's like that. It's remembering that essence of all things, the life force in everything, the manifest and the unmanifest. It's the constant remembrance of that. And the direct contradiction that we are solid, that we are individuals. We aren't. We're part of a collective. We're connected to everything, and everything's connected to us. It's the ego that makes us see this separation. And that is the cause of all of our troubles, because it is the thing that makes us feel sad. It is the thing that makes us feel fearful. It is the thing that makes us feel separated. It is the thing that makes us feel lacking. But that's all, those are all the shams of the ego. And there's nothing to fear but fear itself, right? But even after death, surely, if we look at things from a scientific point of view, and the physicist said an energy once created is never destroyed. Once the bell is rung, it can't be unrung. Because why? That vibration is going on forever and ever in the universe. Stop. So this is remembrance. Just remember.
So I'm going to share words by Piro Murshid Hidayat Inayat Khan, who is the son of Hazrat Piramurshid Inayat Khan, and also the Piramurshid of the International Sufi Movement. And so these are excerpts from Sufi teachings on zikr. The word zikr means remembrance. Remembrance of the presence of God while losing oneself in the folds of a sacred experience. It is the remembrance of a divine presence which no expression could ever describe, but which becomes a reality to the extent that one is prepared to forget the self. The basic zikr practice involves the repetition of the ancient syllable, la, el, laha, el, Allahu, which means, and these were Hazrat Inayat Khan's words regarding the meaning of this phrase, none exists save God. God alone is. Piramurshid Inayat Khan, who brought the Sufi message of spiritual liberty to the West in the early part of this century, has left us his own zikr as a most sacred heritage. In this zikr, the breath of the message of today can be felt as a new impulse arising in the ever-present consciousness. The secret of the magic radiance of this particular zikr resides in the mystical coordination of a melodic raga with a constant rhythmic pattern. So we've been working with that rhythm in the breath. This rhythmic pattern in accompaniment to sacred words, which are offered as a humble invitation to the divine presence within the temple of the heart. The singing zikr of Inayat Khan also involves a rotation of the body from left to right to be done in absolute harmony with the pattern of the rhythmically changed raga. So simply the motion that he is speaking of from left to right. If we're seated, we want to be seated so that we are, our bodies are erect and we can feel the base of our spine and our pelvic bones rooted on our seat or on the floor. And the rotation is from left to right. So think of it as you're moving from the heart center and creating this rotation. And you're going from left to right and back from right to left, returning to the left. And we always begin and end this with the head bowed to the left and towards the heart center. So that's the basic rotation he's speaking of. There are four parts to this singing zikr. And he says, the four parts of this singing zikr practice form a mystical journey from awareness of the self longing for the divine presence to the loss of self in the realization of the divine presence. So the first zikr, zikr one, is the love song. And we sing the phrase La El Laha El Allahu. Does anyone want to just say that with me once, just so you can? Yeah. La, el, la, ha, el, Allah, hu. No, none exists save God. God alone is. The second zikr is based on the words El Allahu. So we've taken away La Elaha. And we will just be singing El Allahu. So as we rotate, we will be singing El Allahu in Zikr 2. God alone is. The third zikr, Allahu. So now the L has been removed. And we sing Allahu in that same rotation. And the fourth zikr, we will be singing Hu. All is, and nothing else is. When pronouncing the sound Hu, which is the basic tone of the universe, the all-pervading sound in space, the all-pervading light, one must try to come into that vibration. Each time we produce that sound, we are like the hammer on the gong, after which the sound produced goes on vibrating forever. While expressing the divine music of God's presence, inspired by the spirit of guidance, one's innermost wish might be to interpret that music harmoniously so that it resounds as beautifully as possible within one's heart as a sacred message of love, human and divine. So in preparation for the singing zikr of Hazrat Inayat Khan.
May I say a word?
Yes,
first and
certainly. Then,
because I don't want to interrupt the practice once we begin it. And perhaps you were going to speak about the Radha, that it, what it
no, you speak.
Keep in mind that Hazrat Inayat Khan was a highly recognized musician from the Indian tradition of musical notations and the scales. And that tradition is called rag or raga. And ragas are very specific kinds of invocations. They are a calling forth of the elemental world, the subtle world, the natural world even, to get it singing and resonating as one whole. And so, based on that, these ragas are sung in four cycles, and Karima Gita will probably address that, and we'll hear it here when we... And they have a... There is, it's for a different reason. They open up a different dimension. Some ragas are only sang in the morning, and some ragas are only sang at noon, and some are only sung at night. And the reason for this is these natural rhythms of nature. But this one raga is called Bivaram, and it is very special in that there's no prescribed time of day, nor there's a prescribed season. Because also ragas are seasonal. They're only sung at certain seasons. It's very interesting when you think about it that Hazrat Inayat Khan brought a message that was universal. It was inclusive and left this legacy of this zikr that is also in that way. This zikr is very, maybe you might say jalal, or it's to develop that receptivity of heart that can reflect this divine dimension. It is very different than a jalal zikr, which has its purpose. And they can be a little rough. This is a different attitude. It's a different mentality. It's a different vibration than what you will experience here. And I hope for some of you, you will get to experience both, because they have a different, open different aspects of our being. But I wanted you to understand that about this music, what tradition it has come from. It's just not something fabricated. There's a long historical background to this. And also, this has been newly mastered, you might say. The sequences, there are four parts to the zikr. Kri Magita explained that and the spiritual dimensions of that. When this is very recently released, it's a much shorter version. Often the zikr takes 1 hour. This will take half an hour. And, excuse me, I got a tickle, so now I have a lozenge in my mouth, and you'll probably hear it clinking on my teeth. I have to apologize, but the different segments of the zikr will have different lengths, and I will leave that to you to experience and see if you can understand the hidden dimension, why that is so. But don't think, oh my God, that section went so short and this one's going so long. It really is, so don't let the mind get confused and entertained by that. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Continue.
And I realized when we were speaking,
yes,
that there was one piece I overlooked. But again, Zikr 1, I did mention, is the love song. But Zikr 2, we're calling, remember, that divine presence to come into our heart. And so we're moving from that place where we're singing the love song to in the stage of the fourth zikr, where there's no longer any sense of self. We are in union with that one. So hence the four stages. It's taking us through this. And each vibration is very different for each stage. And there is a preparation for the singing zikr. And I'm just going to leave it to, we'll begin the zikr, I'll begin singing, and you can follow as you feel you have it and can move with us, because we are all tuning here together as one body through this sacred music. Preparation for this zikr is the practice of what is called the external zikr. And it begins with this mudra, putting the third finger to the thumb, this very graceful hand gesture. And we're making a motion, we're placing the hand at the left shoulder and tracing a horizontal line across the heart center to the right shoulder. And when we do that, we're saying the phrase, "This is not my body." And then we bring the hand to the forehead and we're tracing a vertical line along the channel in which we invite the divine presence into the temple of our heart, resting the hand just below the heart, in between the belly button and the heart center. And we're saying, "This is the temple of God." So we do this 11 times. We'll begin
Oh, I have to say something. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
People might get confused, and, you know, especially if someone has a deal with the Catholic Church, they may be offended by this motion. But let's talk about the esoteric dimension of this. When we draw this horizontal line, it is the line of limitation. It's like the line of the earth plane. This is the... it's just that. It's the line of limitation. And when we make the vertical line, we're crossing that line of limitation. Kind of breaking that, allowing us to connect to something far above that limitation and far